Stepping to the mic today, breaking news, man, from NBC Sports Washington, NBC 4, too, because we see you hosting Washington football team coverage there as well. A guy that's come a long way the last 4 or 5 years, my guy, J.P. Finley. What's up, man?
Says the guy that works for NBA TV and TNT and all sorts of stuff. But thank you, Mr. Miles. You're being very kind.
Well, speaking of which, before we hopped on this podcast, I was making fun of our guy, TJ, who's also on this podcast. Can you believe it, JP? He came to Atlanta after I moved here, and I saw him at the Battery, didn't hit me up, man. What kind of friend etiquette is that? TJ did that to me. Can you believe it?
So I don't know if this is some weird veiled shot at me for not hitting you up, because I told you we were going to Northside Tavern Saturday night. Like, where I was going was very, very widely broadcasted, and you were welcome. You had people in town. You had all sorts of stuff going on. So you could have. Now, I told our mutual friend that you should come to dinner with us. And I was told, no, he's got people in town. He's got stuff going on. So, no, I don't know what TJ did, but I think TJ was right.
So here's the thing. There's levels to this, right? So you go, okay, are we friends? For instance, if someone that you know comes from out of town, like you said, you spoke to a mutual friend, you told me a place you were going to be, I feel like that's fair game. You have obligations. You're coming in town to work. Our guy, TJ, knew that I just moved here. And guess what? I saw him around the corner from my house.
That's kind of funny. That's kind of funny. Yeah. And I also got out of town Sunday night. What the hell with the Atlanta airport? It was 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, like maybe even 8:45. Everything was closed. Couldn't get, you know me, Miles. I wanted a glass of liquor. Couldn't get that. I couldn't get a bottle of water. I couldn't get a bag of Skittles. Everything was closed.
So that happened during COVID. As you know, I've been through that airport a bajillion times. Sure. And that's since COVID. So even now, only half of the bars and restaurants are open.
It's so dumb. It has, like, people have made these decisions 18 months ago when we knew nothing about this thing. Now we know so much, and people are still just going by these, like, what are now antiquated decisions. I swear it's just cost-cutting measures, and they're just,
well, staffing. They can't get enough people back in after they. It's a whole conundrum. But yeah, they can't get people back working at the airport after people quit and got unemployment. Blah blah blah. Speaking of which, something that seems to be a broken system: the Washington football team.
That's defense. A hell of a segue, dude.
Let's start with them, because I picked them up in fantasy. I felt like I won. Like, I was like, I got the Washington football team defense. Y'all don't know. It's going to be crazy because I just missed out on the 49ers. And they cost me 3 straight wins in fantasy. I held on to them for 3 weeks. And I'm like, can you explain to me, you draft a linebacker in the first round, and it's like, oh, that was the missing piece. You have everything else. How do they go from being elite to being not able to compete?
I mean, if I knew that answer, I would make a lot more money than I do. I think a few things happened. I think when they got hot last year was against a bunch of really bad offenses. If you go back and look, that second half run they went on, they got a string of backup quarterbacks. You know, Dak was hurt from the Cowboys. They played Andy Dalton and Ben DiNucci in 2 wins against Dallas. This is a crazy stat for you. In 2 wins against Dallas last season, combined between 2 quarterbacks over 2 games, the Cowboys passed for fewer than 250 yards.
Wow. Dak was putting up 450
in 2
right before he got hurt.
In 1 game, if a quarterback throws for 250, is kind of a ho-hum, that was fine game. We're talking about 2 games where quarterbacks combined threw for less than that. Go to the Bengals game. They were losing before Joe Burrow got hurt. Then Ryan Finley comes in, and he's terrible. When they beat the Niners, they got Nick Mullins. You can beat Nick Mullins. You can get to Nick Mullins. The difference with good quarterbacks when they face pressure is they can still make plays and they can evade pressure. Bad quarterbacks either get shook and go down and get sacked, or they turn the ball over. And I think those were big factors. I'm really sorry. I got something in my eye. But sorry about that. I think this season, I think the weight of expectations kind of got to them a little bit. I think perhaps some of them expected things to go a certain way. I think I was concerned about the linebackers going into the season. You know, they did draft 19th overall. They added a linebacker, and he hasn't been an impact player, honestly, yet. The guy I liked was Jeremiah Owusu-Kamara out of Notre Dame. He ended up slipping to the second round. He is Pro Football Focus highest rated linebacker so far through four games. Jamin Davis is middle of the pack. It doesn't mean that he can't have a good career and maybe even play well this season, but it's not happening right now. It's not helping them right now. Their secondary is a mess. If I was in charge, and I'm definitively not, I think I would look at – everybody gets caught up in base defense, right? 3-4, 4-3, all that stuff. Like, these guys, they're playing true base so rarely anymore in the NFL. It's all about nickel and then sub packages off nickel. Sometimes they're dime. So I would go probably four down linemen, Payne, Allen, Sweat, Young. I would put Davis on the field. Like, you just got to see what you – like, at some point, just let him learn. Let him play through the mistakes, because the other guys aren't playing well, right? But if you don't want to put Davis out there, you could put Cole Holcomb's played decent for them. But I would put Landon Collins, and he doesn't want to play linebacker. That's fine. Call it something else. Come up with some cool
Rover name. Just say, oh, you're a Rover.
Perfect.
Like Cam Chancellor. You're Cam. You're Rover.
Perfect. You know what Jamal Adams does for Seattle? He just plays in the line of scrimmage and because they're using his skill set best. Like, use these guys' skill sets best. So I would go 4-2 there, and then that leaves you 5 in the backfield. I would – Cam Curl needs to be on the field. They're giving Cam Curl snaps to other guys. He's playing about 75-80% of snaps. Collins and Bobby McCain are playing 100% of snaps. I would start to flip this stuff around. I would have Cam Curl. Your corners are going to be William Jackson and probably the rookie Benjamin St. Juice. I would put Kendall Fuller in the slot where he excels. I would go Cam Curl, and I would get DeShazer Everett back on the field. He's a big-time hitter. They have there's no physical presence after you get past their defensive line. They're getting torched deep, and nobody's scared of getting hit. You put Everett on the field, man, he's reckless. He's a missile, and people will recognize him being out there.
How much of it is effort? Because I think you retweeted a video of a guy who breaks down film, and it was like the fourth play of the game, and the Washington football team defensive line was kind of jogging around the field. And he was, you know, this is way inside football. And I'm kind of like, I think it was, is it Brian Baldinger? Is that his name? And I was like, oh man, this is eye-opening because the effort isn't there. And whenever I see that, I go to coaching. Now, I don't feel like this team would have given up on Ron Rivera yet, but is there any indication that they have an issue with, I don't know, the D-line coach, the linebackers coach, the, you know, defensive coordinator? Because from the outside looking in, when I see that video, that's the first thing I think of. And if that's the problem, that needs to be addressed.
So there was that video from Baldy, and then Marcus Spears had a video calling the defensive line play selfish, selfish and undisciplined. I don't think anybody's quit on anybody. I don't think anybody's selfish. I don't think the effort stuff that Baldy was calling out was D linemen running 20 yards downfield. Sure, you'd prefer to see that, but like, I'm not questioning effort or selfishness, but I'm questioning guys that are out to get theirs, kind of, and guys that are like, I'm so good, I can make this happen. I'm just gonna do me. And specifically in the pass rush, I mean, you saw it in that Buffalo game, especially. If you have two guys on the edges that are just sack hungry and maybe perhaps desperate to make plays to get Chase Young through four games has 0 sacks. Nobody expected that. And he could say that it's not affecting him, but he's hearing about it. He's thinking about it. So against the Bills game, especially with Josh Allen, who's so good. I mean, people were just the edges.
He was just step up
sprinting upfield. And then Allen just had this whole triangle of pocket to work with. They were getting good pressure that game from Daron Payne from the interior, but Allen didn't have to worry about the interior pressure because he knew the edges were just going to go aside. There was no contain, and he could just step out and make plays. I thought the D-line played better against Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Ryan still kind of carved them up. I think the secondary is an issue, man. And I think you're getting worse play from Kendall Fuller than certainly anybody expected. And I don't know, man. It's I think the conversation about them having an elite defense, about you using them for your fantasy defense,
that's
top five, top 10 is dead. I think you got to hope. I'm crazy, and Beamish and I argue about this all the time. I think you – right now, what can you count on with this football team? Like what do you expect, right?
Do you think Heinicke is the guy to count on? Because it seems like everybody's putting their chips in there, and after the touchdown pass against the Falcons, it seems like Terry McLaurin, Heinicke are the two people you can count on most. And I'm like, that sounds insane, but that's the truth of what we see right now.
Dude, yes, that's what I was going to say. And I recognize it sounds crazy, but that's what they got. I mean, dude, since Heinicke's taken over, they're averaging 28 a game. They've scored 30 or more in their two wins. Both are incredibly ridiculous last minute wins against bad teams, but whatever, they won the games. Here's one for you. And listen, they got boat raced against Buffalo, right? Washington and Buffalo's defense, if you look at the numbers through four games, I mean, they're allowing 11 points a game. I mean, they're far and away. They're allowing 212 yards of offense per game, which is just nuts. Washington's defense is giving up 417 a game. And Buffalo's giving up 210 or whatever it is. Washington scored more against Buffalo than their other three opponents combined. So whatever's happening, it's not an offensive problem. I think they run the ball fairly well with Antonio Gibson. I think J.D. McKissick's a weapon for them. And I don't know that he's the long-term answer, but right now, Heinicke and McLaurin are the two things you can kind of count on. Defensively, I think right now you're just hoping to get back to average, get back to the middle of the NFL, get back to 14th. Don't even talk about top five.
So I have three letters for you, and it's not WFT. It's DEA, okay? And I saw that, and I'm like, okay, we've had sexual assault allegations. We've had name change. I mean, so many things. It's like every year something new off the field to where – yeah, the coach having cancer is like down the list. You know what I mean? Like that's normally something for a decade to be an off the field issue. Can you explain the DEA in the Washington football team locker room? Because when I saw that, I'm like, that sounds like something once you see a movie and you're like, or a TV show, you're like, they didn't jump the shark. That's too much. That's too much.
No, I can't explain it, Chris. I take it frame by frame. No, I have no idea. I mean, I can tell you the factual news. Like, so we're taping this Thursday morning, right? What the hell day is it? Thursday
morning,
October 7th. So almost a week ago, last Friday, the DEA raided Washington football team practice facility, along with the home of Washington football team head athletic trainer, Ryan Vermilion. There's been no arrests made, no charges brought, but they raided his house and his office. The Washington football team has since put Vermilion on administrative leave due to a ongoing federal criminal investigation that they claim is unrelated to the team. I think it's pretty hard to say it's unrelated to the team when they raid the team's practice facility. The players and the coaches are trying extremely hard not to comment on this thing. Ron Rivera told me that last year during his battle with cancer, he trusted Ryan Vermilion with his health and that he would do it again. The NFLPA has come out and said they want to know a lot more information on this, on how this person is getting tied up with the DEA and is in charge of player safety. It's a mess. And Ron was brought here to clean up the messes, to make change the culture, make things better. This is Ron's guy. I mean, they worked together for 9 years in Carolina. When Ron got the job in Washington, this is one of the first jobs he took This is one of the first hires he made was RV, as everybody calls him. You know, there's a lot of questions. Typically, if the feds are going to raid your house and your office.
So are these like performance enhancing drugs they're looking for? Is it?
We don't know.
Illegal substances? Because here's the thing. If it's this guy has an issue with illegal substances that has nothing to do with the team, that's one thing. If this is a HGH, performance enhancing drug thing, and it involves the team, then we have a whole new scandal in itself.
Totally. And I think the one thing you're leaving out here is pain pills. And pain pills have become such a huge problem in our country. And football team has access to that stuff. So, but all this is speculative. We don't know. So it stands out to me that there's been a federal raid and nobody left in handcuffs. Because typically, like, you watch gangster movies or you watch the news or whatever, like, when the feds show up, there's a couple people going in the back of their car, getting their head pushed down with their hands behind their back. And that stands out to me. You can buy me a beer next time I'm in Atlanta and I'll tell you what I think, but I'm not going to publicly speculate because this is a dude's life. This is federal charges. This is a big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, also when you watch the movies, when the product is moved, they smile at the DEA like, ha ha ha, you missed me. So not saying that happened in this particular situation, but in Raising Kanan, that's what happened. The sure. Power Book story 3. Anyway, getting back to this football team, something I don't like, I really don't like. And I saw it happen with Bryce Harper when he left. Everyone had Bryce Harper jerseys. And then he leaves and it's like, oh, I hate Bryce Harper. Hope he never does anything in Philly. In fact, a guy hit me up on Twitter like a week ago because I was at a Braves game and Juan Soto hit a home run. He's like, oh, Bryce Harper never wins. I'm like, what is going on here, right? I feel that same heat from people with Chase Young right now. Not that it's reached that extreme. And I'm like, are you guys already, on at least on Twitter, changing how you view Chase Young? Like, what's wrong with you people? Do you feel that same energy surrounding the narrative around the hometown star?
So I want to point one thing out real quick. You're the only dude I know that moves to the South and your New York accent becomes stronger.
There's more New Yorkers here than anywhere.
So I don't think it's as prominent, certainly, as when Harper left. And I hate to admit it, but yeah, there is some of that. There is definitely a subset. And dude, I think a lot of it is just on, like, Twitter is this little corner of the world just full of like toxicity. And I think at games and among just fans that watch NBC4 or whatever, I don't think that like vitriol exists. But on Twitter, certainly there is a subset of people that are mad at Chase Young. They don't think he's producing. I don't think it helps to watch Justin Herbert emerge as this star quarterback and to know that, I mean, nobody wants to remember the facts at the time, right? Like, Washington wasn't looking at a quarterback when they drafted Chase.
And no one was talking about Herbert over Chase. I did nobody a bunch said, of shows and no one talked about
Herbert
that.
Over Tua, okay?
No one.
Tua was the guy.
Yes.
Not to mention, at that time, and nobody wants to remember this, they had just drafted Dwayne Haskins in the first round. They just drafted Dwayne Haskins. You can roll your eyes now.
I know. But I didn't like Haskins from the jump.
But at the time, the theory was, hey, Jay Gruden hated this guy. He can play. We're going to give him a good chance now.
Yeah.
And then strippers and interceptions and whatever else. Like,
you didn't even mention a cell phone. The cell phone thing was enough for me.
Sure. He's taking a selfie, his first win. There's
during the game.
The Haskins file is long, dude. I'm not trying to get into it. I'm just trying to say, like, there's so much revisionist history when it comes to Chase Young.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. Chase Young isn't Dwayne Haskins. He's not pulling that, you know, stupidity stuff off the field. He's doing the Under Armour commercials. I'm sure that everything's going to work out with Chase Young being productive. I think you raise a good point about Justin Herbert, but you made me think of this Haskins thing again, okay? The cell phone thing, okay? Here's what I'm saying. It's like if I had a really good show, I have never thought to myself, oh, we're in the final block, selfie time. what kind of NFL quarterback even has his phone on the field? Like, I was so thrown off by that. And I get people that were like, oh, it's a new era. I know it's old news, but it is one of the craziest things that I've ever heard of a starting quarterback in the NFL, because starting quarterback NFL is the toughest job as a starter in all of pro sports, because they want you to be a top 10 elite in that category to have any sort of job security. And this guy's taking selfies.
I'm totally agreeing with you, and I'm laughing because it's 2 years ago. Like, I mean, think about, I feel like in a normal NFL market, that's still a huge story. Everything that has happened since then, nobody's even thinking about Dwayne Haskins.
The like, butt fumble's still a thing in New York. The butt fumble still. If I saw Mark Sanchez today, the first thing I would think of is that.
But yeah. Dude, think, how about this? That team that Haskins was representing when he took the selfie no longer exists. Like, true. Just think of it that way. You know Chris Russell?
Roostar.
Sure.
Roostar. Right. What do you mean, do I know Roostar?
Of course. Guy. So we were at practice yesterday in Ashburn at Washington football team practice, and Rooster's wearing a ESPN 980 home of the Redskins jacket. And I'm like, Rooster, think about this. Not a single thing on that jacket is still accurate. Like, it's now Team 980. There's no more Redskins. Like, none of it. Like, it's just the Haskins thing was a disaster, an unmitigated disaster. Snyder made the pick. The kid took a selfie, his first ever opportunity to get in the victory formation. It was a disaster.
So here's what, final he had a two questions.
Party during COVID, like his coach had cancer.
Oh, final two questions for you when it comes to quarterbacks in the Washington football team, because I was completely against Fitz Tragic. So think about this. Alex Smith has this gruesome injury and has to retire, right? Then they go, let's find the last quarterback drafted in that same draft and go put a guy who's pushing 40 as our starter on the field. I just think that's like the most, and he didn't even last the first half. It's the only Washington football thing I've tweeted this season. Cause I'm like, why would you do that? Why not try to get another quarterback that I don't know, and is in his prime or rookie, and keep Heineke? I thought Heineke was a great move. Why go with the 80-year-old quarterback?
How old man of an injury is a hip injury?
Guess what? I didn't know I had hips until I pushed 30, 32. I started to go, man, what is this pain right here?
No, I got hip pain.
I had no idea what it was. Right. When you hear a guy has hip pain, that's when it's time to go.
I mean, they tried to get Stafford, right? Like, they didn't do what LA did to get him, but they were at least on the dance floor. I think this – either Heineke will prove he's your guy, and I'm not sure he will, but it'd be a hell of a story if he does – or they have to address quarterback next offseason. But, I mean, at some point, somebody has to answer for, hey, we have 5 first-round picks on this defense, and the defense is bad. So that doesn't mean you continue to address defense, but, like, if the defense goes this whole season this poorly –
then it's the defensive coordinator. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, I'm not in that locker room. You're in that locker room. You're not going to say the DC needs to go. But that when I hear that, that's the first thing I think of, is that being around the NFL for years, sometimes when you see all the talent on a team and they're not playing well, you got to be in the locker room to know, and you're around so you would know. But you can see the signs. And that's the thing I think of when I hear that. Okay. Final question on quarterbacks here for you. In the last decade, give me your Washington football team quarterbacks in order from what they did, just what they did here. Because Kirk Cousins, to me, would be at the top of the list from what he's doing now in his career here.
What,
give me your 5.
Seasons, like,
just who had the best output career while playing for the Washington football team?
In the last decade?
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll start. You can go a little bit beyond if you wanted. But I would say 2010. Let's start 2010 and you open season.
Charlie Casserly taught me this term. It's a humble group, which means they suck. I far and away, it's RG3's rookie year in 2020.
That's what I'm talking about.
That was the only time they were a legitimate playoff threat. Nobody
thought, oh, wow.
It was like, man, if they got this thing cooking, they could win some games in January. And they're up 14-0 on the Seahawks. And then Robert blows his knee out again. But nothing touches 2012, Robert. And this is a single year I'm picking. Not Robert. I'm picking 2012, Robert. Then it'd be 15, Kirk, when they got hot late.
Yep.
And Kirk was on fire throwing to Jordan Reed. You like that, all that stuff. Kirk had a couple good years there. It was probably 15, 16, 17, where they didn't get it done. But 15, they won the division. 16 and 17, there was a couple week 17 debacles. But, you know, this is life in Washington. I mean, I guess you look at Alex. Like, before
he got hurt.
I mean, they were 6-3 before he got hurt.
This is what I'm saying.
It was incredibly boring, but they were 6-3. Where am I going after this?
This is why I did this.
You want me to say Heinicke? Are you like putting me in a position?
That's the thing. That's crazy. I tried to do this the other day and I'm like, I couldn't get to five. I stopped at four with Heinicke.
Now, here's the messed up part is you can give me the last 20 years and I still think Heinicke might be part of the equation. I think you got to go probably Brunell in there. Campbell, maybe. I wouldn't. Donovan here was a disaster. Rex, John Beck. I mean, these guys were train wrecks. And the Heinicke sample size is just so incredibly small still. But we'll see.
I mean, that's what's crazy. He's already – to me in the discussion. And while when I watch Taylor Heinicke play, I think, oh my gosh, this is who they're going with. And then every time he makes plays and I'm like, you prove me wrong.
Yeah.
And he shut me up.
If you keep like, there's a very logical, reasonable line of thought, like, oh my God, he can't keep making these crazy plays. But at some point that's just the player he is.
Well, so here's the thing. I was at work the other day and I was talking about Taylor Heinicke after he beat the Falcons, and all the people in Atlanta are like, well, he's from Gwinnett County. He's the all-time passing league. And I'm like, you know, it's always interesting how you come across someone, because in Washington, he's the undrafted Ron Rivera unsung hero. In Atlanta, he is the prodigal son that came home and whipped up on the home team. And why don't they have him as a backup?
Here's my thing. If he was a fifth rounder, if he was a fourth rounder, even if he was a sixth or seventh rounder, it'd be a total different conversation. And that's just perception is reality, man.
Yeah, and then maybe Heinicke would step in and he wouldn't have to go.
He got a Bud Light deal now, man. He's good.
All right, JP Finley, I know you have an actual show to do. We appreciate you stepping to the mic today, and hopefully no more raids for the Washington football team and some wins.
Where's Monica? She's too big time to do the podcast anymore?
Well, she was on ESPN last night doing the WNBA.
Big time. Big time. Everybody's New York, Atlanta, moving away, just leaving little old me and Dre stuck here in D.C.
In D.C., one of the greatest cities in America, if not the greatest. All right, JP.
My hometown, buddy. I love it. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you, Miles.